Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with Matt Neely. It's great having Matt for a couple of days with me. Get a chance to work with a guy that really knows what he's doing. Not that my other guys don't know what they're doing, but he knows what he's doing and loves what he's doing.
Other guys taught me.
The other guys taught me. I mean, Tom and John, don't get me wrong. I love them. They're great, but you're terrific too. The guys taught you really well.
John and Tom sure did.
Yeah. So it's great to have Matt Neely on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing our program. It is Thursday, December the 28th, 2023. We're in the Green Thing Zocalo Village studio on 1030 KVOI, The Voice. Tucson's right now the only source for local radio news and talk. We begin our 14th year on the Buckmaster Show next Tuesday, and then we'll start our 36th year in Tucson media at the same time next week. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, the Buckmaster Show live line for our telephone interviews presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We try to bring in General Jeffrey Buchanan every 4 to 6 weeks. We think he's a terrific addition to our program. General Buchanan, 3-star Army general, retired almost 4 decades in the Army. Retired in 2019, addition to commanding 6,000 troops on the southwest border. He led the military operation after Hurricane Maria in Puerto Rico. Let's see, 4 tours in Iraq, 1 in Afghanistan, graduate UA and its ROTC program, kind of homegrown there, General. General Buchanan advises Homeland Security, one of 5 commissioners for the Arizona Game and Fish, and we're going to be talking a lot about game and fish today, an advisor for Vet Voice Foundation, a volunteer deputy sheriff in Cochise County. This is the reason I like having you, General, one of the reasons, because you wear so many different hats. And depending on where the news is, we can always shift to have you talk about it. The general resides, he's got a lovely wife and a family, and he has a small ranch. He's down in Patagonia, which is about a dozen miles north of the border, right?
Yep.
Happy New Year. Happy holiday season. General,
thanks,
always a pleasure to have you. And like I say, there's always some news tied into what you're doing. And today is one of those days, because this is the day 50 years ago, President Nixon signed into law the Endangered Species Act. And at the moment, let's see, since that was signed into law, 1,663 animals and plants have been placed on the list since then. Now, 100 have gone extinct. How about in Arizona? How do we stack up?
We're actually doing very well. I'd like to highlight a couple of our success stories. But right now we have 19 fish on the list. 7 are threatened. 12 are endangered. And terrestrial, which includes, you know, mammals, but also snails, salamanders, and frogs. We have 19 animals on the list, 8 are endangered, and 11 are threatened. One success I wanted to make sure to talk about is the Apache trout, which until this year was endangered. You know, Apache trout are endemic only to Arizona, only in the White Mountains of Arizona. We have another fish that is unique to Arizona, but it also includes some of its ranges in New Mexico, which is the Gila trout.
Do people fish for the Apache trout?
They sure do.
Go ahead.
And its greatest conservation effort started with the White Mountain Apache tribe in the 1950s.
Really?
And since then, between the tribe, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and the Arizona Game and Fish Department, we've been very active managing, growing the population, growing trout in our fish hatcheries, and then using them to populate streams. And this year, they were taken off of the list. And so this is our state fish. It's a great success story.
I didn't know it. That's our state fish?
It is, the Apache trout.
Okay. Is it good eating?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I have I have caught one. I've never eaten one. At the time, I'm not much of a fly fisherman. Actually, I'm better at eating fish than catching them. But this particular one, I was learning to fly fish up in the White Mountains, and I caught one Apache trout and released it.
You know, I mentioned there you're on a 5-year appointment and there are 5 commissioners. How did you kind of transition into the game and fish area before we'll get back to the animals, but first, how did that happen for you?
I don't want to bore the listeners with the entire process, but there is a process. We get one new commissioner every year.
Mm-hmm.
And the commissioners each have to come from a different county. So
geographically, they have to be diverse.
They have to be spread through the state. There's a requirement that no more than 3 can come from any one political party. And, you know, Bill, I'm nonpartisan.
I know you are.
I'm an independent.
I know.
So it's easy to kind of
try to go right down the line.
Right?
Yeah.
It's easy to swing in whichever direction. You know, the year that I joined, there were 3 Republicans on the list, and so they had to have a non-Republican.
Mm-hmm.
And so they come from different process. They go through a screening process and then eventually interview with the governor's office.
Mm-hmm.
What brought me to it was 50-plus years of being a bow hunter, plus my bachelor's degrees in wildlife ecology, as is my wife's.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and so I have been very interested and active in conservation issues really my entire life, since I was a kid and a Boy Scout in Arizona, backpacking all over the state.
So this is kind of like one of your dreams come true.
It is. It's a perfect way to continue to serve and help the people of Arizona and the wildlife of Arizona.
Okay, Apache trout, that is certainly a success story, as you articulated. I remember I was over at the TV station on PBS 1998. Can even tell you the reporter, my friend Ted Robbins, did the story when the release was made of the Mexican gray wolf in northern Arizona. That was back in 98.
Yeah,
where
so,
are we since then?
Yeah, so
25 years.
Yeah, so what our listeners may not be familiar with is that we had Mexican wolves in both Arizona, New Mexico, and in Sonora for years and years, and they went. They became what I guess the proper term is extirpated. The species was not extinct, but they were removed completely from the United States in Mexico, in New Mexico, and Arizona. And through a cooperative agreement with the government of Mexico and the state of Sonora, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Arizona Game and Fish, Fish and Game in New Mexico, and the White Mountain Apache Tribe, we
mm-hmm.
all got together.
Mm-hmm.
And under the leadership of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, reintroduced these wolves in 1998. And there are breeding pairs on both sides of the border.
There were half a dozen, as I recall.
Yeah, it was not much.
Male,
it was less
male,
than 20
female,
in
couple
both
of pairs.
States.
Yeah, okay.
Right.
Okay.
But they've been very actively and closely managed since then. And right now, as of this year, I think it was a minimum of 241 wolves. This includes a program of what we call foster parenting. So they have pups born in captivity, but then introduce them to a wild den, and they are reared in the wild, and it's a great success story. So you can actually thicken the population with these wolves growing up in the wild.
Have they spread out quite a bit? Or?
They have, but it's really it's along the border of Arizona, New Mexico, the blue primitive area, the Gila Wilderness on the New Mexico side.
I would think they would love the blue, because I've heard that is like the most rural area in really the Southwest.
It's the most wild area.
I'd love to see that area. People
say
it's incredible, the blue. Yeah.
It is.
So they must be happy there.
Oh, yeah. Well, so obviously, you know, there's a lot of issue or a lot of focus on the issue, and where you stand depends on where you sit.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of my jobs as a commissioner, is to listen to all these different views, whether it's
the ranching,
cattle ranchers or sportsmen or environmentalists, you know, or people representing conservation groups. So we take all this information in and try to make the best decisions for all. I'll give you one issue that right now is with respect to Mexican wolves, that is a thorny one. And by the way, great success. They're recovering. They're still on the endangered species list, but inshallah, over years and more success, we'll be able to get them off of it. So one issue is where we have all decided to keep them, which is south of I-40. It's very purposeful to keep them south of I-40, and some groups are pushing for a reintroduction of wolves into the Grand Canyon. The Fish and Wildlife Service and Game and Fish Department absolutely do not want that. And here's the issue.
Yeah.
A Mexican wolf is not a separate species. Okay. It's actually a subspecies of northern gray wolves.
Okay.
Now, I don't want to get into much on the biology side.
Yeah,
but
the
when
clock's
you have,
running, so
if,
go ahead.
Right. If they're the same species, even different subspecies, they can link up, they can mate, and produce viable young.
Okay.
Unlike a horse and a donkey that create a mule,
yeah,
you know, mules are sterile, these would actually be viable young. Well, there are northern gray wolves in Utah and Colorado, mm-hmm. and if we allow Mexican wolves north of I-40,
yeah,
they're going to link up, they're going to mate, mm-hmm. and over time, what it'll do is it'll get rid of Mexican wolves as a separate subspecies.
I hear you. So real quickly, and we are against the first break, but the natural question, I know you don't want them to go north of I-40, so how do you keep them south of I-40?
We have a significant portion of them are collared. We track them. And a couple of years ago, we did have a male go north of I-40, recaptured him, and moved him south.
Good.
So that's it.
All right. I've got some more wildlife questions for you. Then we'll talk a little bit about the border in segment two. But right now, I want to talk about Mona's Danish Bakery. And I know you love bakery goods, don't you, General?
They're good for my hips.
Oh, aren't they, though? Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Their website's monasdanishbakery.com. Steve and the team had a great holiday season, and the holiday season is still with us. So Danish Kringle would be very appropriate for New Year's Eve or New Year's morning. As you watch the Tournament of Roses parade or whatever. So Danish Kringle's always timely for the holidays. Let's take a break. It's Buckmaster on a Thursday afternoon. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006. And the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studios. General Jeffrey Buchanan, always a great guest, and we're glad he's a regular guest. Try to bring him in every 4 to 6 weeks. Not only his Army career, we always can talk about that. We can talk about game and fish, which we're talking about today. And I do want to zero in, because this is the 50th anniversary of the Endangered Species Act. Generally, has it been a good thing, General Buchanan?
It has. Yeah. I think it's important for all of us and the health of the entire planet to maintain the biodiversity we have. And, you know, we live in a pretty unique place. And within the state, I live in a unique place. In fact, I think that the particular area that I live in outside of Patagonia has the highest biodiversity of anywhere in the continental United States.
Yeah.
It's pretty significant.
And birding, we in the game and, fish, the birding is amazing.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, we have, I think, 14 different species of hummingbirds.
That's what
in
I
the
heard.
Area. And, you know, we have 800 species in the Game and Fish Department that we manage. That doesn't include insects, 600 different species of bees.
Wow.
I mean, you know, it's
600.
So without some of the steps in, like the Endangered Species Act has brought us, some of those species could be gone forever if we don't take special steps to care for them. And we were talking briefly before the show started about the Sonoran Desert Tortoise. You know, through the efforts.
How do you get one?
Yeah. I mean, we adopt
you've got,
that.
You've got
I've
one.
I've got one. And in the game.
How do you get one?
So very easy. Go on the website for the Arizona Game and Fish Department. There's a whole section on adopting a tortoise.
Wow.
We adopt out about 300 a year. We're always looking for people to take one. And all that we ask is that you have the right area for it. You have to build a little burrow for it. You got to live at the right place.
Yeah.
So Tucson and all of Pima County would be great. But if, for example, you lived up on the top of Mount Lemmon, you'd have to bring it in the wintertime because it's just too cold there.
Yeah.
I live at about 4,500 feet, which is about the maximum altitude you want to let them live year-round outside.
Do you bring him in a little enclosure then on the cold nights?
No, he is underground from November till March.
He is?
Typically, yes. So he's underground.
Are they good
right
companion
now.
Animals?
Yeah, they're great. You know, they're great animals, but they're very much solid. They're very solitary creatures.
Yeah.
And, you know, we never want to reintroduce them to the wild. So once we have one that's been in a captive situation, they come to the Game and Fish Department. We have a long relationship with the Arizona Sonora Desert Museum, and they participate in our adoption program.
Good.
So you could get tortoises from there or in the Game and Fish Department.
Good. I'm glad we talked about that. And don't let me forget, I want to talk about, going back to birds, the sandhill crane. This is one of the great wildlife experiences that many do not know about.
Yeah, very, you know, close to Tucson, the cranes migrate through.
Where are they coming from?
Well,
Canada?
They summer up in Canada, up in the northern plains, like many waterfowl do. But they come to the area. They congregate on the Wilcox Playa.
Mm-hmm.
And an area that's even a little closer to Tucson than the Wilcox Playa is Whitewater Draw, which is a Game and Fish Department property. Please come and take a look at the sandhill cranes. It's a great time of year to be able to see them winter, and it's pretty phenomenal.
So it's fairly easy to reach the whitewater area.
Yes, sir.
And there's observation platforms and everything.
There is. Yep.
And so just I've seen pictures and I really want to go. How many birds are we talking about? Roughly.
Thousands.
And they stay till like March.
They winter here, and then they head back north.
All right. So let's sort of transition here to the border. U.S. officials were in Mexico City, I think, yesterday, trying to say, hey, what kind of solution or how do we mitigate what's going on at the border? What's your take?
Well, it's a very complicated and wicked problem that's going to require a lot of different parts to solutions. So one part of the problem, I think that we as a nation have to really figure out what we want of our immigration policy. We've got to sort this out, and then we've got to be clear in our communication about it. One of the drivers for the lack of stability and the overwhelming surges that we've had in the border area of migrants in the past 6 months or so has been poor communications or poor understanding by people who are looking to come here. And they believe, they've been told, it's, you know, in a lot of these coyotes' interests that move people to attract more of them, that the border is open, come and we'll get you across. Well, that's not the case. But that's disinformation.
It's to the advantage of those people, those coyotes, to say stuff like that.
Absolutely, because
look,
to them it's more money.
It's more money. Hey, the United States, the border's wide open. My friends, we can get you there. Here's the amount of money we need. So,
yeah, you know, three or four years ago, the dominant person coming across the border was from Central America, mm-hmm. Honduras, Guatemala, mm-hmm. wherever. They were fleeing violence. They were seeking economic opportunity, whatever the case. And now, you know, a significant portion are from poor countries in Africa, from China, from Sri Lanka, all different
and
sorts of countries.
And this is new, relatively new
it
for
is,
what we're seeing.
And their behavior is different. So rather than you know, seeking to infiltrate and come into the United States undetected to find a job, they're coming across the border and claiming asylum, turning themselves in. And so one part of the solution is we got to fix our asylum process, which includes more officers, more judges, all of this, to deal with the backlog. You know, currently we have years and years of backlog of asylum cases, and sometimes these people, you know, they come into the border, they claim asylum, and they disappear.
I wonder what
years.
Percentage, so, you know, do not follow up at all.
Right. So part of the issue is border security, but the bigger issue from my perspective is really about immigration policy. How are we going to deal with it? How are we going to deal with it in the long term? And it's not about keeping people out. You know, we're a country of immigrants. And
we
need the workers on this side of the border, you know, but it would be nice if they actually paid taxes for the advantages that, you know, they're bringing to their families. And so to be here legally, to be working, to be a recognized worker, to pay taxes for the benefit that they're getting through schools or hospitals or whatever, I think it's a complex issue. I think it can be solved, but it's going to take some courage on the part of politicians, you know, who haven't been able to solve it for something like six different presidential administrations.
Oh, it's been decades.
Today.
But, you know, everybody's got to get on the same page on this. At some point, you know, can we stop kicking the can down the road on this and let's try to get some kind of a solution rather than just saying these, you know, the sayings, close the border or whatever.
Right, we do no good when we take people from Mexico and we claim that they're the problem. You know, they just happen to be our neighbors.
Yeah.
They're worried about border security. They're worried about money and weapons headed south. We're worried about people and drugs coming north. Well, we got to work together as part of a partnership, I think.
All right, General Buchanan, I got about a minute or so. So you're going to have to make this really fast. The Ukraine war, we're looking at an anniversary coming up here. I don't see much change there, do you?
No, I don't. And I can't believe you gave me a whole minute to talk about Ukraine and Russia.
Yeah, I know.
So I just hope that we are able to continue to support the people and the government of Ukraine to stand up to, you know, just Russian thuggish behavior. There's no way to describe it other than war crimes, the initiation of the war, how they've been conducting the war. And, you know, this is something that as a member of NATO for years and years, you know, was part of my blood. Well, we had great hopes when the Soviet Union collapsed that a rational democracy would rise in Russia. And it's a return to the days of empire, unfortunately.
We've
got to stand up to it.
Looks at it like Stalingrad, just keep throwing troops at the border, but I mean, not the border, but at the Eastern Front, if you will. All right, and I'm really out of time, so I can't even get into, we'll talk about Israel the next time. Hopefully there's some kind of change by the next time we have you on, but it's pretty bleak, isn't it?
It is, but you know, one thing very quickly. We've got a new year coming up.
Yes.
I want to ask all our listeners, try to make a difference by helping other people. I don't care what your line of work is. I don't care what you do. If you can volunteer your efforts somehow to help other people, it'll make all the difference in the world for them, but also about how you feel about yourself.
I like it. Thank you very much, General Buchanan. Hope you have a wonderful new year. See you in 24, okay?
Yes, sir.
Take a break right here, back after the mid-show break on Buckmaster.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Thank Thinking about a river cruise? Let Bon Voyage Travel guide you to choose the perfect cruise to complement your vacation dreams. River cruising has become more popular than ever, and we know you have so many options to consider when selecting the destination, cruise line, and ship. At Bon Voyage Travel, we provide a comprehensive presentation on the top tips for river cruises and have a team of specialists to assist you. Visit bvtravel.com and view our River Cruise 101 presentation today.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We are in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios. My friends at Green Things say thank you very much, Tucson, for making this holiday season so successful. They're over at 3384 East River Road, a beautiful 13-acre site. Everything you need for the garden. And Zocalo Village, their sister business, has this amazing collection of pottery, the Talavera pottery, even some pottery from the island of Crete. Their website is greenthingsaz.com, and then the Zocalo Village component of the business, their website is zocalovillage.com. They are open daily. Do such a great job. Jan and Jack, the owners, usually on the premises, one of them or both, every day. They do just an amazing job of making sure that, and their sales staff is so knowledgeable. Ask them a question, would this do well here? Well, they're going to tell you. And so you've got some really knowledgeable people helping out. All right, Bill Doley. Dr. Bill Doley is the founder of the nonprofit organization Archaeology Southwest, founded back in 1989. Dr. Doley is focused on Tucson's archaeology and history since the 1970s. I want to point out Dr. Doley is one of two dozen contributors to the Buckmaster Show. He is our contributor on archaeology. When I asked him what he considered to be the big event over the course of his career that changed how we think about Tucson's history, Bill quickly answered, the Rio Nuevo Project. So let's explore how and why the Rio Nuevo Project has had such an impact. Let's go now on the live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, to the small community of Washington Crossing, Pennsylvania, where Bill is spending some holiday time. Bill, how are you?
I'm doing great, Bill. A little rainy back here. I understand I missed some rain in Tucson, but I'm getting it here.
And this is a very historic place where you are residing right now.
Indeed, the place where Washington crossed the Delaware back during the Revolutionary War.
Well, a lot of history there and a lot of history in your current hometown, Tucson. And why don't we begin for newcomers, and there are a lot of them that listen to this radio program. They want to find out a little bit about Tucson. Maybe they've heard, Bill, about Rio Nuevo. Give us the update and tell us what is the Rio Nuevo Project.
Sure. It was approved by voters way back in 1999. And it was basically a means to invest increased sales tax revenue into the zone from downtown along the Broadway corridor. And that money would be reinvested right back into that area. And what I wanted to focus on today was the very early years from 2000 to 2004, when about $2.5 million was invested in Tucson's culture, history, and traditions.
It was a pretty rich period of time as far as rich in the area of research for you and your colleagues, wasn't it?
Indeed it was. And the research impact that I think really shook up people locally in Tucson, as well as others all across the nation interested in early farming, was that we documented the arrival of maize in Tucson a little over 4,000 years ago.
Wow.
So expanding on that, maize is what we oftentimes refer to today as corn. But it was a wild grass growing down in central Mexico. And people had been experimenting with it, grinding the seeds and that sort of thing over 6,000 years ago. But around 4,500 years ago, maize underwent a genetic change. And it became more productive. And very soon after that, it started to spread both north and south, to South America as well as up into North America. And so by a little over 4,000 years ago, people were growing it in the Tucson area.
So how does something just have a genetic change, Bill Doley? I mean, how did that all happen?
Well, it was the human intervention had part of the impact, but I am not a plant geneticist, and I can't go into great detail on the details of that. But the plant became much more accessible and produced more. You imagine eating just what you see at the end of a stalk of grass. Now when you look at corn, it has all those little separate but large pieces on its ears. So it was a significant change, but it wasn't our modern corn that came north.
So you're saying Bill, you're saying this new plant being grown in Tucson had a huge impact on the way of life here in Tucson. So how did life in Tucson change 4,000 years ago?
Well, the river, the Santa Cruz River, as we call it today, now a dry riverbed because we sucked all the water out of the Tucson Basin, was important back in the day because it had water and attracted other animals and wild plants. But people were able to settle in along the river. They created irrigation canals within at least by 3,500 years ago. And the ability to focus on those local resources there meant that they didn't have to move around so much. And so that work or transformation in the past, its impact on Tucson comes about by other projects done along the Interstate 10 corridor. We've discovered in multiple places ancient fields, and they've been covered by the Santa Cruz floodwaters to such an extent that they're very well preserved. And you can even see the individual planting holes where maize plants were planted. And there was one case that the preservation was so good that you could see human footprints, and you could see where their dogs had walked across the fields as well. So that has really sort of transformed the way people have thought about Tucson's really deep agricultural history.
Yeah, and I was just going to say, Bill, a lot of that research then was funded by the Rio Nuevo Project, correct, in the early 2000s?
Exactly. That $2.5 million, much of it, kind of the radiocarbon dating, the excavations there at the base of A Mountain, and work over on the east side of the river near the Presidio, it brought all that information together, and it was supplemented by that there was a big expansion of the freeway through town. It was supplemented by other projects along the river corridor as well. So they've all come together. And so even our mayor and city council members are oftentimes, quoted as saying, Tucson has 4,000 years of agricultural history. And being politicians, sometimes they stretch that to 5,000 years.
They add an extra 1,000. So I remember that excitement when those 3,000-year-old footprints were found and people were able to visit and observe them. So when we come back with Dr. Bill Doley after our break, we'll talk about the way that the Rio Nuevo Project's research has led to the birth of of new nonprofits dedicated to our local history and traditions. Back right after the break.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare.
Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane in North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com. The Regional Transportation Authority Plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
I've known the Chavez family for 35 years, and thanks to Chavez since 67, you won't find any soft, saggy cushions at the Buckmaster Bungalow. Chavez since 67 can restuff your cushions with new, firm, high-density foam. What a difference that makes. They also offer full upholstery services. Give them a call at 520-795-8032 or check out the website, ChavezSince67.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, urging our listeners to take a break and visit Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Only about a three-hour drive, Southwest New Mexico, spelled out .org, O-R-G. That is your starting place to find out and be tempted by many, many activities, a lot of outdoor activities over in that beautiful corner of New Mexico. Great places to stay and to eat as well in historic downtown Silver City. Dr. Bill Doley is on our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Dr. Doley shared with us in the first segment. First of all, I want to say Dr. Doley is president and CEO of Archaeology Southwest, a nonprofit organization here in Tucson, and he shared with us the story of the annual, well, not annual, the the arrival of maize. Our modern term is corn here in Tucson, roughly 4,000 years ago. The Rio Nuevo Project funded some of that early research on Tucson's history, and Bill also tells me that we have some vibrant young nonprofit organizations that are building on the outcome of the Rio Nuevo research. So, Bill, can you explain that for our listeners?
I certainly can. But I actually want to emphasize an important point first, that before we talk about these so-called newbie, new arrival organizations, the research that was done for Rio Nuevo revealed a great deal about the very deep history of the indigenous people of this area, the Tonawanda. Here's the original people of the Sonoran Desert area, where Tucson is now, and they're still here at Santa Vera District, in South Tucson, and in this community of Tucson. And across the Tohonto Reservation, the Tohonto Nation west of Tucson. And the Pascua-Yaqui tribe also was centered along the Rio Yaqui farther south into Mexico, but they also have a deep history in the Tucson area.
Well, I'm glad that's a very important acknowledgement, because the tribal history, Bill Doley, is of central importance, isn't it, to the past and presence of this region?
Indeed, and these nonprofits that are, you know, building on that base owe a lot of their success on the collaboration with these tribal nations that are part of our community. So there were four new nonprofits that have derived out of Rio Nuevo. And I'll just run through them fairly quickly here. Each of them has a story where we could have a whole show on. Mm-hmm. But the excavations in the Presidio area of downtown Tucson documented some of the walls and rooms of the Spanish fortress that was constructed in 1776, as well as earlier layers going all the way back to those first farmers that we were just talking about. And the nonprofit Tucson Presidio Museum now interprets that full scope of Tucson's history there in the downtown area. And then the second nonprofit is, we move across the river over to the base of A Mountain, where the Friends of Tucson's Birthplace, another nonprofit, is based, and they run the Mission Garden. That's focused on replicating and celebrating Tucson's full 4,000 years of agricultural history. So they're actually growing the maize and the introduced crops, and even the they have Chinese gardens over there. So they're reflecting that full history of Tucson.
And Bill, before you continue with the other two, another word about the Mission Garden. It's really been successful in growing a lot of these what they call legacy plants, hasn't it?
Yes, the crops and trees and food sources that we think of, you know, just part of our community now. Many of them were introduced by the Spaniards, and they've done a great job of. You can go there and see them in fairly significant numbers and experience the fruits if you're there at the right time of the year.
So we heard about the Presidio Museum, and then we're just talking about the nonprofit Friends of Tucson's Birthplace. How about kind of the broad scope of the whole Santa Cruz Valley?
Well, that's, I think, the exciting part about, you know, Rio Nuevo focused and illustrated how important the Santa Cruz was, but people started immediately thinking, well, it's this whole river valley that's important. And finally in 2019, this is an effort that was started way back in 2003, but Congress passed the establishment of the Santa Cruz Valley National Heritage Area. And they're focused on, again, that broad swath of nature, culture, and history throughout the watershed. So from the international border up to the Pima County line, north of town. And there's a Santa Cruz Valley Heritage Alliance that is the nonprofit that is managing that new heritage area. And interestingly, we had at one point kind of given up on that heritage area being established. And an early form of that Santa Cruz Valley Heritage Alliance was the part of the development of Tucson as a city of gastronomy, which is a UNESCO designation. So that is another derivative of these early efforts related to Rio Nuevo. And now that 4,000-year agricultural history was an important part of the foundation of that case for Tucson as a very having a very deep time depth in terms of its agricultural and culinary traditions. So we've researched and funded by the community and by other development projects has really had a huge impact on this community.
And your organization, Archaeology Southwest, has almost served as sort of an anchor for a lot of this activity, Bill Doley. A quick comment on that, please.
Yeah, I mean, we, even before Rio Nuevo, had obtained some small grants that allowed us to search for parts of the Presidio Wall downtown. We were there during the Rio Nuevo project for sharing information through our quarterly magazine. And the our movement in 2010 into the downtown area was also stimulated by the, we could see the impacts developing in the downtown area and wanted to be part of that revitalization of downtown. So we've had an active role, and it's guided our behavior over time.
Well, we do have some really great nonprofit organization. It is a organizations. It's an area that is so rich in archaeology. I'd like to carve out just a few seconds where people can actually, you mentioned some of the areas along I-10. What would you suggest if somebody has some time over the holidays be a good place to see some of the very early settlements of the Santa Cruz Valley?
Well, you can see reconstructions at both the Mission Garden, and which is at the base of A Mountain, and at the Tucson Presidio, again, which is just right across the street from the YMCA downtown, or a block north of the historic Pima County Courthouse. You can see reconstructions of early agricultural period houses in both of those places, and have good access to interpretive assistance there. And Pima County has done a really good job on protecting important places. And at the far north end of the valley, at the literally the north end of the Tucson Mountains, off on a little side road called Linda Vista, there's a ball court village called Los Morteros that has been protected by Pima County with bond funds that, the local citizens approved. And you can go there and walk through one of the little later in time villages and see what happened in the period from about 700 to 1200 AD, and see what a Hohokam ball court looks like. So there's a lot of choices.
All right, Bill Doley, Archaeology Southwest, a quick overview in about 30 seconds.
Well, we're a Tucson-based nonprofit. We're focused on the entire Southwest. We really like to bring the key elements of the past to the and values up into the present. So you can find us, archaeologysouthwest.org.
All right, Bill Doley, always a pleasure. Happy New Year to you, Bill. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Bill.
All right, that's going to wrap it up for the Buckmaster Show. On everybody here at the Buckmaster Show, Bustos Media Tucson, the whole gang who make our job so much easier, making us so welcome. We all wish you well and a very happy new year to everyone. Hope it's a good one.